Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour. Today on Local Talk, we'll break from our traditional format somewhat with a hearty, happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Hoping all your travels and family plans have come together, and your kitchens have melded the aromas of the season, and you're all enjoying the bounty of our beautiful Iowa land. Later in the hour, we'll be enjoying thoughts from a contributor to Local Talk, Carolyn Raffensperger, director of the Science and Environmental Health Network, will be here. It is so nice that during these busy days, she had time to reflect on Thanksgiving 2022. Yet first, let's enjoy some holiday music from Keith Jarrett on the Colne Concert Recordings. A few years ago, I learned of a cookbook by Sean Sherman, and in our quest to honor Native American Heritage Month,
this is a writing by Sean Sherman, the founder and CEO of The Sioux Chef, and the author of The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen, which won 2018 James Beard Award for Best American Cookbook. Mr. Sherman writes, "Every November, I get asked an unfortunate, loaded question. You're a Native American. What do you eat on Thanksgiving? My answer spans my lifetime. I was born and raised on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota in the 1970s and am a member of the Oglala Lakota Sioux tribe. Growing up, I went to a very small country school on the reservation in the poorest county in the United States. Our school had predominantly Native students, but we were still taught what everybody was about, Thanksgiving. It represented a time when pilgrims and Indians celebrated together, and it was about being thankful. Only later would we find out that it was a lie. But as I was taught this story, my family gathered on Thanksgiving at my grandparents' ranch, where we held a huge feast of very typical recipes, most of them straight out of the circa 1960s Betty Crocker cookbook. I remember the mingling smells of dishes cooking throughout the day as our moms and aunts crowded every kitchen surface preparing for the large offering. We had staples like roasted turkey, mashed potatoes and milky gravy, sweet potatoes with marshmallows, green bean casserole with onion crisps, brand name stuffing, canned cranberry sauce, an assortment of cold pasta salads, jello molds, cookies, deviled eggs, and 1950s style glass platters filled with canned California black olives, pickles, and piles of veggies. On occasion, we had Lakota dishes like caniga, intestine soup, and wajopi, choke cherry sauce. Those are good memories, though once my grandparents passed away, my family never celebrated holidays like that again. Gathered in one place on the reservation. In the years since, my perspective on Thanksgiving has changed, at first from a sense of bitterness surrounding the real history of those lies we tell, of the actual stories we should honor and mourn, and then with a renewed hope for what our celebration could be if we simply changed our focus. It was the Wampanoag in 1621 who helped the first wave of Puritans arriving on our shores, showing them how to plant crops, forage for wild foods, and basically survive. The first official mention of a Thanksgiving celebration occurs in 1637 after colonists brutally massacre an entire Pequot village, then subsequently celebrate their barbaric victory. Years later, President Washington first tried to start a holiday of Thanksgiving in 1789, but this was nothing to do with Indians and settlers. Instead, it's intended to be a public day of thanksgiving and prayer. That the phrase "merciless savage Indians" is written into the Declaration of Independence says everything we need to know about how the founders of America viewed the indigenous peoples of this land. Merciless savage Indians. It wasn't until the writer Sarah Josepha Hale persuaded President Lincoln that the Thanksgiving holiday was needed and could help heal the divided nation that it was made official in 1863. But even that was not the story we are all taught today. The inspiration for that was far more exclusionist. According to the 2009 book Thanksgiving, Biography of an American Holiday by James Baker, who was a researcher at Plymouth Plantation, this changed during the Progressive Era, 1890 to 1920, when the United States became a global power rife with industrialization and urbanization. It saw a rise in nationalism as European immigrants poured into the country, and the Protestant Americans who'd massacred indigenous people feared being displaced. Colonial ideology became the identity of what it was to be truly American, and they began implementing teachings to clearly define Americanism for the new immigrants. One of these was the sanitized story of Thanksgiving, which fabricated a peaceful depiction between the colonizers and the tribes, and neglected to mention the amount of death, destruction, and land grabbing that occurs against the first peoples, setting the tone for the next 200 years. By 1920, writes Baker, the story of pilgrims and Indians became a story every American school child was taught, even in native schools. But our families lived something different. My great-grandfather helped fight off General Custer at the Battle of the Little Bighorn, alongside other Lakota and Cheyenne, not even 100 years before my birth. I think about my great-grandfather's lifetime being born in the 1850s, towards the end of the genocide that began in the 1600s across America, and stretching into the subtler but still damaging years of assimilation efforts we have endured since. He saw escalating conflicts between Lakota life as he knew it and the ever-emerging immigrants from the East. He witnessed the disappearance of the bison, the loss of the sacred Black Hills, and many broken promises made by the U.S., along with atrocities like Sand Creek and Wounded Knee massacres. He saw his children attend the boarding schools where they had their hair forcibly cut and were punished for speaking their languages. I wonder what he thought about the Thanksgiving story. But I do not wonder about this. Thanksgiving really has nothing to do with Native Americans and everything to do with an old guard conjuring a lie of the first peoples welcoming the settlers to bolster their false authority over what makes a real American. Remember, only in 1924 were Native Americans allowed to become citizens of the United States. And that was 1924. And it took decades more for all states to permit us to vote. It is a story of supposed unity, drained of the bloodshed, and built for the sake of division. Many of my indigenous brothers and sisters refused to celebrate Thanksgiving, protesting the whitewashing of the horrors our ancestors went through. And I don't blame them, but I have not abandoned the holiday. I have just changed how I practice it. And we're reading from by Sean Sherman, who is the founder and CEO of the Sioux Chef and the author of The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen. And Mr. Sherman goes on to say, "The thing is, we do not need poisonous pilgrims and Indians narrative. We do not need that illusion of past unity to actually unite people today. Instead, we can focus simply on values that apply to everybody, togetherness, generosity, and gratitude. And we could make the day about what everybody wants to talk and think about anyway, the food. People may not realize it, what every person in this country shares and the very history of this nation has been in front of us the whole time. Most of our Thanksgiving recipes are made with indigenous foods, turkey, corn, beans, pumpkins, maple, and wild rice, and the like. We should embrace this. For years, especially as the head of a company that focuses on indigenous foods, I have explored native foods. It has given me and can give all of us a deeper understanding of the land we stand on. It's exciting to reconnect with the nature around us. We Americans spend hours outdoors collecting foods like chanterelles and morels and ramps and wild ginger, choke cherries and wild plums and crab apples and cactus fruit and pawpaws and manzanita berries and cattails and maple and wild rice, cedar, rose hips, hickory, acorns, and walnuts. We can work with native growers producing heirloom beans, squash, and pumpkin, and native corn varieties, all coming in many shapes, sizes, and colors. We can have our feast include dishes like cedar-braised rabbit, sunchokes with sumac, pine-stewed venison, smoked turkey with chestnuts, true wild rice with foraged mushrooms, native squash with maple, smoked salmon, and wild teas. No matter where you are in North America, you are on indigenous land. And so on this holiday, and any day really, I urge people to explore a deeper connection to what are called American foods by understanding true North American histories and begin using what grows naturally around us and to support Native American growers. There is no need to make Thanksgiving about a false past. It is so much better when it celebrates the beauty of the present." And that was by Sean Sherman, founder and CEO of the Sioux Chef and the author of The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen, which won the 2018 James Beard Award for the Best American Cookbook. Thank you, Mr. Sherman.
You are listening to Keith Jarrett's Köln Concert, and this is a special Thanksgiving broadcast on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum. From time to time, we welcome Carolyn Raffensperger to grace our community airwaves.
Welcome to Local Talk.
Good morning, Pat.
Yeah.
We're on the eve of Thanksgiving. It's an amazing time to reflect.
Oh, I think so. There's a couple topics that come to mind, but what's on your mind today?
Well, I think about this this festival that we're going to recognize and honor tomorrow, and what a complicated history it has, given the origin story of our Thanksgiving, you know, with the Pilgrims and the indigenous community on the East Coast. We have that story as well. And yet, what I always think about is that a healthy culture, every healthy culture, has a harvest festival, has a place where they stop what they're doing and they recognize the gifts of the earth. And so for me tomorrow, it is to sit down and look at the things that will grace our table and be thankful for what the earth has provided for us in another year. And so I think about healthy cultures. How do we build a healthy culture where Thanksgiving is not just about the difficult story between the colonial empires that conquered this continent and the indigenous suffering that happened over that, but that we are able to make reparations for that story, but also to give thanks for all that we have received.
I wonder what I think the indigenous culture there at Plymouth Rock, the Wampanoag people, I'm wondering if they're even still in existence.
I think they are. And, you know, the irony is that my family is descended from the Mayflower. And so the story has a little bit more what Emily Dickinson called the zero at the bone for me. I'm a descendant of William Brewster, who came over on the Mayflower. And so it's one where I recognize my history on this continent. I'm a 13th generation in the United States, what became the United States.
So you have a genetic link to the times of the, essentially the first Thanksgiving, when
I do.
So the story goes, everybody got together and as you say, took care of each other. It sounded like the Native community was very important in that first harvest season, time to be grateful and get ready for winter.
Yes, yes, and I hope to honor that part of the story, to give thanks to the indigenous people that have tended the earth for so long, that understand those rhythms of the seasons, and that kept my ancestors alive all those generations ago, and maybe to their regret that you know, later, I'm sure that my ancestors were part of the genocidal nature of our relationships that evolved over time. But, you know, that doesn't take away from what the earth has given us now.
Exactly.
And what I want to do is give thanks here for all that this great prairie has given us in Iowa. I'm particularly grateful that the earth did not kick us in the butt, so to speak, this year. It's one of the first years in a long time that I've not had existential dread almost every day from the weather. The fierce winds, the 80 degrees in November, we have had an almost normal year, and I am so grateful. I looked at the rainfall, and we're within about a half an inch of normal rain for the year. So we get about, I think, 36 inches in Ames a year. And at this time in November, we're at 34 inches, and we're right there. We're at 34, you know, a little bit over 34.1 or 34.7. And how wonderful, how wonderful that we have somehow had this blessed year of almost normal weather. After, you know, 2 years ago, the derecho and the days where we had ferocious wind and terrible drought and the unseasonable weather where every day felt like we were under threat. And since March of this year, we have had a gentle weather for the most part. Yes, we've had storms. Yes, we've had heat. Yes, we've had some dryness, but it did not feel as daunting and life-threatening. And I don't know how many more of those years we'll have, but I'm grateful for this year.
Yeah, that's a wonderful way of looking at it at this season. Yeah.
Tom Nichols in The Atlantic wrote about what we should be thankful for this year, and he said, we should be thankful for what was averted, the disasters that did not happen. Mm-hmm. And I am. I'm grateful that democracy held in mm-hmm. our country. I'm grateful that we had near normal weather. I am grateful that the earth produced such bounty for us to put on the table tomorrow. I'm grateful that my friends and family are here sharing and able to share that meal. I'm grateful for the mysteries of the earth. I'm grateful for it all.
Mm-hmm. And we're grateful for your voice at this time of year and always. We don't want to take you for granted, Carolyn Rapid.
You know, thinking about how much is changing right now with Bitcoin in collapse, Twitter in collapse, you know, so many of the tech companies in trouble, you know, the kind of roiling and upheaval going on in politics, all of the things that are changing right now, being grateful is like a center that holds. Mm-hmm. It's one that can anchor us and give us a place to stand. Looking around at what we have been given, what is, and what, you know, what we also have to offer because of that, the gifts that we have received.
Well, you put it in words so well, Carolyn. Yeah.
I was thinking of also of W.S. Merwin's gorgeous poem called Thanks. Would it be okay if I read it?
Oh, certainly. I'd love it.
He says, listen, with the night falling, we are saying thank you. We are stopping on the bridges to bow from the railings. We are running out of the glass rooms with our mouths full of food to look at the sky and say thank you. We are standing by the water, thanking it, standing by the windows, looking out in our directions. Back from a series of hospitals, back from a mugging after funerals, we are saying thank you. After the news of the dead, whether or not we knew them, we are saying thank you. Our telephones, we are saying thank you. Over telephones, we're saying thank you. In doorways, in the backs of cars, and in elevators, remembering wars and the police at the door and the beatings on stairs, we are saying thank you. In the banks, we are saying thank you. In the faces of the officials and the rich and of all who will never change, we go on saying thank you. Thank you. With the animals dying around us, taking our feelings, we are saying thank you. Mm-hmm. With the forests falling faster than the minutes of our lives, we are saying thank you. With the words going out like cells of a brain, with the cities growing over us, we are saying thank you faster and faster. Mm-hmm. With nobody listening, we are saying thank you. Thank you. We are saying and waving, dark though it is. Mm-hmm. And when I hear that poem, I do know that people are listening because of the radio, because my voice is carried over these waves into the ears where that poem, only one line may have resonated with you mm-hmm. and a different line with another person. For those who are witnessing the destruction of the earth, that line about the animals dying around us may be particularly poignant, and yet we say thank you. Mm-hmm. For those of us who say thank you to water, I say thank you to water daily when it washes over me, carrying the dirt and the grime, and it goes back to the earth, whether it is the water that I drink and that fills my body with those glorious molecules of H2O, I say thank you. So here we are together, each of us with different things to be grateful for. Here we are. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And again, could you say the author of that poem?
W.S. Merwin. Uh-huh. W.S. Merwin lived in Hawaii, and he was poet laureate of the United States. And I had a chance to meet him years ago when I did a TEDx talk in Maui. Mm-hmm. And he gave one of the most transcendent speeches ever. And he was responding in part to one of the other TEDx speeches about refugees. And he, this man with his white hair, glasses in that tiny cone of light, standing there speaking about refugees, about what matters in this world, how we belong together. It was one of the most extraordinary things I've heard. And as a poet about the earth, he created a sanctuary for plants on Maui with his legacy and estate. And he's had this commitment to the earth. He wrote a long poem about putting a tree back together again. And so the whole poem is the reverse, you know, tree that's been sawed down, that's sawdust, and about making it back into the tree that it had been. And I'll never forget the astonishment and the sorrow. We cannot put the earth back together again once we have dismantled it. And yet, you know, there are people like you, like many of our friends, who are working to let the earth restore herself. So Aldo Leopold said that healing, especially of the earth, is its own capacity for self-renewal. So one of the things that I'll pledge tomorrow is my commitment in response to the bounty that the earth has given me, my pledge to help it do everything it can for that self-renewal, the ability of the earth to heal itself, to produce all that the birds need, those ospreys that you love so much, the monarchs, the white pelicans, the fish in the rivers, that they will have what they need to make homes, to make their nests, to recreate, to be their wild and wonderful selves. I want to give the earth every chance, a sporting chance, to do that. So that will be my pledge tomorrow. Mm-hmm. On Thanksgiving.
Oh, delightful. What a nice message. You're listening to KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, and we're visiting with Carolyn Raffensperger this day before Thanksgiving, but with gratitude in our hearts for all that bring us peace and joy to our lives, to our existence. Carolyn, is there a Thanksgiving memory that kind of stands out for you?
The memories that for me are of gathering around the table with family. It has been every year of my life, as far as I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I think every meal has had food that came from our garden. Mm-hmm. When my grandparents were alive, it was food that they had hunted and gathered. One of the things that I like to do is to have something wild. Not that is simply from the earth itself. Dandelion greens or whatever I can find that I can eat mm-hmm. from the earth as a direct transmission of the gifts that the earth gives and that I am then obligated to give back in equal measure to the earth. Mm. So my memories are of family gathered around.
Oh, that's delightful. Thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that.
This is a special KHOI Thanksgiving broadcast that we're offering our local talk listeners today. We're visiting with Carolyn Raffensperger, Executive Director of the Science and Environmental Health Network and contributor to KHOI Local Talk. Here's a bit more holiday music from Keith Jarrett. Let's return to Carolyn Raffensperger and a tribute to her friend and mentor, Joy Braun, a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Nation. Joy Braun from Eagle Butte, South Dakota, died November 13th, 2022. She was 53.
I can look back to 2016. We have kind of a Thanksgiving tradition in the Schlarbaum household that it was nice for my parents to be invited to other people's Thanksgivings on Thanksgiving Day, but my mom always wanted us to come home on Saturday. So that was traditionally our system for a number of years, and she's no longer with us, but I still kind of feel like there's a calling to me to return to Southern Iowa after Thanksgiving each Saturday. But in 2016, I headed up to Standing Rock. And I thought, well, I'll just take some deer meat. I like deer protein, and I had that to share. I remember somebody had donated just a whole lot of sweet potatoes. I do recall deer meat and sweet potatoes on Thanksgiving in 2016. And
wow. And wasn't that the year Jane Fonda also sponsored a Thanksgiving dinner at Standing Rock?
Well, there was a lot of activity, of course, for me. I miss that, but it would be easy enough to say it was really ramping up with participants into the thousands. But where I kind of found myself centered was just with the people, and but that kind of brings to mind a passing of one of the people that started Standing Rock, Miss Joy Braun. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts about her passing here last week.
Oh, yes. And before I go into the memories and a memorial for Joy, mm-hmm. I want to thank you and honor you for doing what you did. A vet went to Standing Rock taking gifts of food, and true gifts of the earth, venison and sweet potatoes, standing with the people in protection of the water against climate decimation. What an amazing thing, and a great Thanksgiving memory. And Joy, longtime friend of mine, I often say that we could tell the history of the environmental movement based on friendships. Mm-hmm. And Joy was a dear friend of mine. I was trying to think of when I had first met her. Joy belonged to the Cheyenne River Band of the Sioux, so just south of Standing Rock. And she was a veteran of big pipeline struggles. So she had worked on Keystone XL, and I may have met her there. I just don't remember. She was the pipeline fighter for the Indigenous Environmental Network, and I had been working with IEN for years and years and years. Their executive director had been on the board of the organization I work for, the Science and Environmental Health Network, through the early 2000s on through. So Tom Goldtooth, the executive director, longtime friend, and mm-hmm. his staff, the staff that worked with him at IEN, were just remarkable, stellar people. Our stellar people. IEN is a fabulous organization.
It's that acronym.
Indigenous Environmental Network.
Thank you. Yeah,
it's IEN.
IEN. Yeah. People can go to that website. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yep. And so we've had a number of big pipeline struggles. We're in our fourth or fifth right now. Iowa is in its third big round of struggles. And however I had met Joy, I think it was in 2014. I'm not entirely sure. Yeah. And because we had worked on the Keystone XL pipeline, which primarily went through Nebraska, South Dakota, that's where the struggle was centered. Joy and I knew each other. And because we had found out about the Dakota Access Pipeline before the North Dakota, the tribes did. Because a reporter at the Des Moines Register cousin had been approached by a land agent And so we mobilized, the Sierra Club and Wally Taylor called together a group in Iowa to begin fighting the Dakota Access Pipeline. And the Dakota Access Pipeline is the pipeline that led to the Standing Rock resistance and the camps to protect the water at the Missouri River. So we started organizing in Iowa first. And because we knew Joy, I invited Joy down to Iowa to lead a direct action training in Iowa. And she invited me to a meeting at Standing Rock in March of 2016, where the grandfathers of the Ocheti Shakoi were going to decide whether to oppose the pipeline. And so I went to Standing Rock in March. It was snowy and cold, and Joy was there, and LaDonna Redmond was there, and LaDonna Brave Bull Allard was there. Face Spotted Eagle was there. Many of the great leaders of the pipeline struggles were there. And I was present when the grandfathers voted, decided, they didn't, it wasn't so much a vote, but decided to oppose Dakota Access. And right then, I think LaDonna and Joy decided to start the camps. And the big camp, the first camp, called Sacred Stones. And that was on land that LaDonna owned, and Joy went and set up camp there, all by herself at first. And she was disabled. And so this is not an easy thing to do. There were, I think, 11 people when I went to the camp at the end of April. They needed a boat for the camps, and I think they had, you know, 10, 12 people at the camp at Sacred Stones at that time. And so I took my kayak up. It fit in my little car, my my little Toyota, and I took that up so that the camps had a boat that they could patrol the river and look to see what was going on. And Joy put out the call for more people to come. And they started to gather. So I was there March and then either April or early May. And then I went back up in August. And Joy was coming down here. So she had been back and forth to Iowa. I'd been back and forth to North Dakota. And, you know, I'm not central to that, to the Dakota Access story. But the friendship actually changed the course of things. I was a lawyer up at Standing Rock, so a lot of the lawyers knew defense, knew how to defend First Amendment rights, the right to protest, the right to assemble. They knew how to get people out of jail, bail them out, and how to defend people who had been charged with criminal acts. I knew the pipeline, and I knew the pipeline law. Inside and out. And so that's what I contributed. But when I was up at Standing Rock, the camps were just getting going in the kind of full swing. And so a couple of other camps started because the resistance was growing. That was because of Joy. Joy had called out to people. And because of our connections through the Keystone XL struggle and the Cowboy and Indian Alliance, of which Joy had been part of, that had brought together farmers and indigenous people to fight against Keystone XL, we had some relationships that had already been created. And so we were able to both mount a resistance in Iowa that was formidable. We had almost, I think, about 500 arrests in Iowa. People don't know that. They had a little over 900 arrests at Standing Rock. So we had this back and forth in large part because of these relationships that were longstanding. Mine with IEN and specifically with Joy. And what I want to say about Joy is that she was fearless, absolutely fearless. And she stood for future generations. She stood for water above all else. She was working to prevent climate change and the destruction of her home. She worked for sovereignty of tribal nations, and she was an extraordinary force of nature herself. Mm-hmm. She loved deeply. She was fierce. And she did all of that while disabled. So the admiration, love, and respect that so many of us hold for Joy. You know, she died about 2 weeks ago, and the loss is immeasurable. Mm-hmm. We were now working together to stop the carbon dioxide pipelines that are going to crisscross Midwest. And so she was part of the national group that I have convened on the carbon dioxide pipelines. And Joy brought that entire history with her of defense of the land. And what she pointed out over and over was the reason to work together was not, oh, the poor Indians, you know, but that they brought a knowledge and they brought legal tools that we dominant culture, the white culture, does not have. Mm-hmm. So the Army Corps of Engineers, which was the main permitting agency for the Missouri River, they have a different relationship with the tribes than they do with, say, the Sierra Club. And they have legal obligations to the tribes, which can be used in defense of the water, and which we can all use in our campaigns when we work together. Mm. And she pointed out over and over and over again that that the alliances were to bring together unique strengths. And Joy brought those strengths to us. She, and hopefully we supported her in that. You know, another thing about Joy was there's conflict in coalitions. There's a lot of conflict. And Joy never let a conflict fester. One of the things I know about Joy in the last days of her life, literally the last days of her life, is that there had been some conflicts, and she resolved them. Mm-hmm. She resolved them. It brings tears to my eyes. Mm-hmm. How she managed to set aside anger and hurt and help others set aside their anger and hurt. I heard about this from someone who had been in some conflict with her, and that they were able to resolve that was one of the gifts that Joy brought us. Astonishing. Just astonishing.
Well, I realize her passing is a great loss to you and to the universe. And hopefully, yet there will be a greater inspiration in her passing, and we can all benefit from the lessons or the life work. I remember at Greengrass where there were people in wheelchairs there to pray with the White Buffalo Calf Sacred Bundle. And it was a hot day, but Joy in her wheelchair were right there. And that was quite an introduction of the ways of the Native community at that time. And that was to register, well, and invoke the help of the White Buffalo Calf Woman Bundle to stop the Keystone XL pipeline, which in some regards, it's still on the drawing boards.
But. Well, Keystone XL, the President Biden stopped it. Mm-hmm. And TC Energy has said that they're not going to pursue it. Mm-hmm. So the Republicans have argued that they want to revive it. If they had taken control of Congress, they wanted to revive the Keystone XL pipeline. We've stopped that so far. Mm-hmm. Dakota Access is up and running. The fact of the matter, though, is that Joy, as a member of one of the tribes, the tribes brought lawsuits against Dakota Access, and they won. Mm-hmm. Now, why it was they had won the lawsuits that those permits were given illegally for the Dakota Access Pipeline, why the pipeline is still running, is a total mystery to me, mm-hmm. and an injustice. But she never gave up.
Yeah,
she never gave up.
Yeah, she started a movement if you will, and yet it was just part of her life plan to include her way of pointing out injustice and making a stand, and she certainly, from her wheelchair, she certainly did stand head and shoulders above many other of the people that were standing in resistance to that.
Yes, she did that. And one of the things that her legacy will go on because of all the young people that knew her work, that she worked with. She had children. Her daughter, Morgan, is an intern now with the Indigenous Environmental Network. The younger generation will carry on Joy's work. Now Joy is an ancestor. And what an extraordinary ancestor she is.
Mm-hmm. Well, what a message for Thanksgiving 2022. And we certainly appreciate all that you bring to KHOI Community Radio and to the universe, Carolyn Raffensperger. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat.
You have been listening to a special Thanksgiving local talk that has included Carolyn Raffensperger, longtime contributor to KHOI's local talk, as she paid tribute to Joy Braun, who started the camp at Standing Rock in 2016 in resistance to the Dakota Access Pipeline. There is a famous scene of the area where upwards of 10,000 Indigenous citizens and supporters gathered first at Sacred Stone, then across the Cannonball Creek at Standing Rock. Thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey, and thank you, Mike Murphy, for engineering and all that you do for community radio. We are so grateful to have you and Eric Blocker here at KHOI, and thanks to our guest, Carolyn Raffensperger. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The other artist you heard was Keith Jarrett. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. And all of us at KHOI Local Talk, engineer Mike Murphy, producer Lynn Carey, and hosts Dennis Hart, Anna Magnuson, Mike Metz, Susan Franson, Paul Wearson, Gina McAndrews, Ann Kitzel, and I've been your host, Pat Schlarbaum, wishing you all a safe and memorable Thanksgiving 2022. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting KHOI Community Radio, and see you again on the radio.